USA.org.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This is hour two of the Paracast. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. We brought along some former co-hosts and our guest co-hosts because they're dear friends of mine, and they have so much to say. This is a way of talking shop, answering your questions. Greg Bishop, Paul Kimball. Paul, we miss you terribly, and I hope you'll get back on the show more often because you always have such great insights. In fact, you have one of our premier moments on the Paracast. This is one of my favorite moments where, in referring to the Aztec New Mexico crash case, you know, that's the one where Scott Ramsey and Frank Warren are still engaged. And by the way, Scott Ramsey's book supposedly is going to be out this year. You know, I'll believe it when I see it. But you, Paul, made that statement about the fact that the Aztec case is like Dracula. You drive a stake through it, and it keeps coming back. I think of John Carradine in the movie House of Dracula from the 1940s.
Yeah, well, I'm one of the idiots that actually pulled the stake out, too. So it's about six or seven years ago, I was making Do You Believe in Magic? So here's the full story. I was doing that for Canadian Network, but we were really short on the budget. I mean, really short, even for one of my UFO films. And so I was scrounging around trying to raise money outside traditional sources. And Stan Friedman hooked me up with Scott Ramsey. He said, look, I've heard of this Ramsey guy. He talking about the Aztec case. Turns out, long story short, Ramsey had 12 or 13 investors who could raise about a grand each. And I basically just piggybacked one film on the other. Went out to Aztec, filmed pretty much everybody I needed to film for the Majestic 12 film. And at the same time, like Carl Flock was a good example, I just ran one interview and then said, okay, let's take half an hour, have a glass of Coke, and I'll come back and interview you about the Aztec thing. And so, you know, it's the one gig I ever did where it was basically for the money because I needed the money to help finish this other film. As it turned out, as I was going along, I thought, well, this, okay, this is interesting, which is kind of like the guy in Dracula 4 or one of those sequels who has maybe, you know, he doesn't know as much as he should. And he shows up at Count Alucard's house and he doesn't realize that Count Alucard is actually Dracula backwards. So he walks in, he opens up a crypt and he goes, hey, this is interesting. Some dead skeleton with a stake driven through its heart. Well, why don't I just pull the stake out and see what happens? Nothing bad.
In fact, you describe Boris Karloff in the film House of Frankenstein, yeah, where he plays the guy who's doing this fake carnival or something, and he's going to show the genuine skeleton of Count Dracula. And, of course, he pulls the stake out, and there's John Carradine.
Yeah, you know, it's the thing you learn. You make mistakes. It wasn't a mistake for me to make the film. I actually like the film because it gives Carl Flock, I like watching, Carl was a good friend of mine, so anytime I can watch Carl, who's passed away, it's nice. But Carl basically deconstructs the Aztec case and shows why it was a hoax. Around that, you have Stan and Scott Ramsey arguing for why it's not. I would say you can ignore that part. But at the end, there's also a mention of the Farmington Armada, which, as Carl pointed out, there was a bona fide, genuine, very interesting UFO case in the Aztec area. Farmington's about 10 miles away from 1950. Almost nobody remembers that, but somehow Aztec has creeped back, a pure hoax, has creeped back into the public consciousness, which is kind of a, there's your answer for what's wrong with UFO research again. Because something flying over your head that you can't explain is not as sexy as crashed alien spacecraft with bodies and a government cover-up.
And I'll tell you what, I would then consider this part of Blowfish's question about the best and worst UFO cases. Would you regard that, Paul, as among the worst?
Aztec, I don't even regard that as a UFO case. So I regard that as one of the best hoaxes. You had a best-selling book by Frank Scully who made a fair bit of money off it, I'm sure. You have a really cool story about these guys pulling this oil scam in Colorado back in the day and using UFOs. Oh, my God, I just said back in the day. Wow. I swore I'd never do that. So anyway, back in, you know, the 1940s and early 50s, it's a fascinating story. And even the intelligence agencies, the FBI, got involved to an extent. So it's a cool story, but it's a lousy UFO case. You know, the worst UFO case, there is no worse UFO case. Any that remain unsolved, assuming that they're actually unidentified, are interesting in one way, shape, or another. So I don't actually have a worst one, I guess.
Greg Bishop, do you have a worst or a most disappointing UFO case to offer?
You know, I was thinking about that when Paul was talking. I think the worst UFO case is Roswell, because there's no solution to it. There never will be a solution to it. And people keep arguing about it and wasting time, energy, money, and breath on it.
Yeah.
That's probably
the worst. Flogging a dead horse.
Yeah, just because of the time it's taken away from anything useful and how many people put all kinds of effort into it. And how unsolvable it is and how unprovable it is to most people. I mean, a lot of UFO enthusiasts, researchers and all that think it's the sine qua non UFO case, at least crashed UFO case. As for best cases, I sort of agree with Paul. I've got favorite cases. I don't know about best cases. Maybe the stuff in Paul's film, obviously, best evidence. But I've got favorite cases like Stan Gordon's case from 1967 where the guy saw... Two people saw a bunch of UFOs, or I think two UFOs, and then two Bigfoots walking along.
Show
the
us, yeah.
Yeah, holding glowing orbs, I think. They disappear, and then the guy goes crazy and starts spouting something about the end of the world and how man has to... It's an incredible case with all the weirdness that UFO researchers usually don't want associated with UFO cases, but it's very important, I think, to me, this weird stuff, these outliers...
Right.
Come up again and again, and I think they're very important to the UFO question and are routinely ignored.
Chris?
Oh, I've got a bunch. One of my all-time favorites is the Clearview case from 78, I believe, or 79, where you have inside of the Air Force Academy, you have Air Force officers arriving in, supposedly, in a saucer-type craft and confronting a ranching family. And having a Bigfoot standing nearby with a blinking box that was apparently under the control of the Air Force officers. You have physical evidence, Bigfoot hair, you have cattle mutilations, you have the types of attendant phenomena that Greg was mentioning. Also, another case, which I personally investigated, was the NORAD phone call to the Rio Grande County Sheriff in January of 95, where they called to report a significant few acre-sized heat bloom on the side of a mountain in the San Luis Valley. And the events that surrounded that include Bigfoot sightings, low-flying B-52s, the bait-and-switch coordinates by NORAD to the sheriff and search and rescue personnel, and then just dozens of attendant sighting reports around the same time. I think it was a Dark Horse UFO sighting of 95, the case of 95. So... In terms of worst, I would have to agree with Greg. Roswell, I mean, what can you say? I think that too much time has been spent on Roswell. There's not enough time on breaking cases, moving the field forward. You can dig and dig and dig, and the more you dig, the more dirt you're going to uncover. But at some point, let's get the stake firmly planted in Roswell, please.
You know, the problem I also see, guys, is that we keep resurrecting the old cases. You know, we go back, we don't bring up newer cases. I mean, obviously there were UFO sightings after Roswell, but we have to find ourselves stuck with Roswell in a rut. Maybe, it's a little bit of intellectual laziness, as it were, that we take an old case and we simply beat it to death, and then somebody else takes the case and it's like the movie, the movie where you have sequels and sequels, and eventually the sequels die out because you run out of ideas. Like for a while, Star Trek ran out of ideas until they rebooted the franchise. So you take Roswell, and you've got Roswell, Roswell 2, Roswell 3, Roswell 496, and you think, after Roswell 496 and 3/10, we've run out of something here. If you do find some physical, solid evidence of Roswell, fine. But right now, it's people remembering things, and we're not going to say they're lying, but remembering what has happened 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. The world has changed. Their experiences have changed. And you have the core question, can you even, after all that cultural conditioning, all that contamination over the years, remember anything that old accurately? I mean, we argue about what happened yesterday. You have the talking heads on cable TV. They can't figure out what happened yesterday. How do we know what happened that we can remember or hope to remember 50 or 60 years ago? We have Paul Kimball, Greg Bishop. Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Have you been sitting on a few great domain name ideas but haven't locked them in for yourself? Good. Now you can buy them through the number one domain name registrar, Namecheap.com, as voted by the top tech blog Lifehacker. Just like the name says, you can buy domains cheap, as low as $2.99. And every new domain comes with WhoisGuard, our special privacy service, free for the first year. Now that you know, it's time to grab those domain names before someone else does. Namecheap.com. Go now. Namecheap.com.
Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Good day. Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources. February 25th, 2011. Gold opened this morning at $1403.60. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1489.83, $719.92 for a half ounce, or $359.96 for a quarter ounce. That's $1489.83, $719.92, and $359.96.
The Constitution and the Bill of Rights have been reduced to old relics politicians ignore, trample with their outlandish, overreaching policies. Your support of the Campaign for Liberty stands in the way of this insidious process. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I've teamed up with the Campaign for Liberty to offer the authentic proof quarter-ounce pure gold coin. For only $390 plus shipping, Midas will donate $100 to this incredible organization. Help fight big government by ordering your gold coin at 800-686-2237. You get to win twice by owning gold and fighting an overreaching government. Call 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Shank. This week, we introduced a new product from eFoods Direct, corn chowder. And let me tell you, its homemade flavor is absolutely amazing. You know eFoods. We've brought you the best food on the planet for years. As you know, we pioneered a line of quick-fix meals that are super easy to fix. Obviously, winter is upon us. You can save 20% on the wonderful soup and bakery special. It's a lot of food for less than a dollar a serving. It includes the new corn chowder I told you about and the other wonderful soups. It also includes the delicious cornbread muffins and buttermilk biscuits to go with the soup. So you have great food you can serve this winter or jumpstart your food savings account for the future. Saving 20%. Call 800-409-5633 on the web, efoodsdirect.com/Alex. That's 800-409-5633 or on the web, efoodsdirect.com/Alex.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher-safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning. Eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion. Fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793. 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids. The original since 1976.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you want to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out on iTunes.
We continue. We're in the second hour of our fifth anniversary episode. Answering your questions, the co-host is Chris O'Brien. We have Paul Kimball, Greg Bishop. Glowfish asked me some really great questions here. And as I said, we're covering some of them. We can't cover all of them. But I'll give you an example of this. Blowfish asked me, Gene, what's your thoughts about ufology since you first became interested, and what's your thoughts on the future computer developments? Whoa. Okay, I'm going to be brief about this because I really want our guests to do most of the talking this week. First of all, it's amazing to me how we've gone nowhere. The UFO field can be described in terms of the common belief by reading a book called Flying Saucers from Outer Space by Major Donald Kehoe, now in the public domain. You can download a copy from 1950, and many parts of UFO research have not changed. Then there's a book by Kehoe, Flying Saucer Conspiracy, about the Silence Group, the government keeping it all a secret. We still think that. We have disclosure, we have exopolitics. That hasn't changed. What has changed is maybe a small number of UFO investigators who realize it's a whole lot more complicated, and they're trying their level best to figure out other possibilities. I mean, John Keel alerted us to other possibilities. Jacques Vallée, towards the end of his life, Dr. J. Allen Hynek. I interviewed Dr. Hynek maybe, I don't know, a few years before he died of a brain tumor. Very friendly guy. We had, I think, dinner together. I interviewed him, and he had that broad hint. There's a lot more to the UFO field than just aliens from Zeta Reticuli coming to see us. But the other question for our panel, because all of us are involved in that one way or another, what is the best sci-fi movie and the worst? So, Paul Kimball, do you think Plan 9 from Outer Space was the worst?
In terms of production value, probably. I mean, you know, it would be right up there. But as with Greg, I don't know about you and Chris, I have an enduring fondness for Ed Wood and really bad filmmaking because, you know, he's the anti-Orson Welles. He had all of Orson Welles' drive and chutzpah and ability to lie and get things done, but only to a point. He didn't have any of Welles' talent. So it's a yin and a yang. If a universe is going to have Orson Welles making Citizen Kane, then you should have an Ed Wood making Plan 9 from Outer Space. And I think then that somewhere on that continuum between the two are most other films. So for me, the best science fiction film, and it's an interesting question, is, yeah, it's Doing Time, the one Mac Tonies and I wrote that I hope to make this year. There you go. I'm traveling into the future to tell you what the best one is going to be.
Okay, but, so how about Day of the Earth Stood Still? It is such a classic in its own way. What do you think, among the top five best films anyway?
I did a top 10 sci-fi films of all time, I think, on my blog several years ago. And to me, Blade Runner, Solaris, the Russian version, although I kind of like the George Clooney version too, 2001, A Space Odyssey, any film where you are, what science fiction should do, frankly, what UFO research should do, is question whether there's some other intelligence out there that interacts with us and also question ourselves. Who are we? What are we doing here? What's it all about? And so I think the best science fiction films are the ones that do that. And I think those three that I've just named do it. You know, plus I like Terminator too, and I like Aliens. So sometimes, you know, just a good shoot 'em up in outer space is fun as well. If I could only ever watch one, if somebody said you can only ever watch one science fiction film ever again, I would say Blade Runner is the one that I just keep coming back to, and I go, I look at it, and it was visionary. Ridley Scott was so far ahead of the ball in terms of imagining a new future. A lot of what he was talking about has come true, and I think the stuff that hasn't come true may well come true in the next 30, 40 years.
I'm glad Soylent Green never came true.
That we know of.
Well, of course. Now, that was a Charlton Heston film. One of
Edward G. Robinson's last film.
That's right. Edward G. Yes. Robinson's last film. And his final words were, Soylent Green is people.
Yeah. When was the last time you had a cheeseburger at McDonald's?
Okay, now we worry about what's in it. Greg Bishop, what do you think? Best and worst science fiction films?
Well, are you talking about that address the UFO subject or just science fiction in general?
The question is open-ended. Go either way.
Questions open-ended. I would include what Paul was talking about. I would also include Clockwork Orange. There's Kubrick again. I would include The Thing, the original Thing from the 50s.
And remember, by the way, The Thing was portrayed by Marshall Matt Dillon.
Yes. James Arness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter Graves' brother, for those of you who remember Mission Impossible.
Planet of the Apes, actually. Brazil, one of my favorite films. That's a science fiction film. There's so many of them. And worst, I don't know. There's so many of them to choose from. And Ed Wood is too obvious to me, even though he's a hero of mine. And as you know, I open...
you open your show with Plan 9 from Outer Space.
The beginning of Plan 9 from Outer Space. Just to, one, because it's I love Ed Wood. And the way he was portrayed by Johnny Depp and directed by Tim Burton, I thought was perfect in the Ed Wood movie. But, you know, one, because he's just so inept. But two, because he just, like Paul said, he had such drive and he had such dreams and really wanted badly to make this, you know, all these epics and these and this big splash in the film industry. And he never did. But the thing is that, you know, think of how many idiots you see walking around that say they're going to do something and they want to do something and they never do anything. They're countless. And here's Ed Wood, who probably made the worst science fiction films ever made. It practically everybody in the civilized world, at least in the West, knows about it just because he was so bad. Just there's lesser known ones like Beast of Yucca Flats and you know, all there's so many thousands of them. I love them all because they're so inept and so ridiculous, and to me that just holds a mirror up to, you know, everything that people think is good and right and perfect and proper and all that, and shows how ridiculous, silly, and even creative people can be. And I think that's wonderful.
The reason I mention Day the Earth Stood Still is because it has implications for the UFO field, the original one. Now, amongst the worst films was the remake with Keanu Reeves. The original one, you have to think, the picture of the spaceship taking off at the end, it was used by the late Howard Menger as photographs of UFOs and some of his contact claims. Remember that? Also, the scene where Michael Rennie as Klaatu is shot down near DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. Now, the reason we mention that is not far from that location, as depicted in the film, is where NICAP, the legendary UFO organization, located their headquarters. That's a fact. Well, those inside jokes. I also like the film because it came out at a time where science fiction was always the alien on the loose, going to attack and kill Earthlings. Here, it was trying to have a positive message, which is, you know, if you're going to be warlike, we're going to take things into our own hands, but if you Earthlings will just pursue the straight and the narrow and get your acts together, you can join the Federation, the Galactic Brotherhood. And they chose, I think, the best actor for Klaatu, Michael Rennie, because nobody heard of him in this country. He was well known in England, but nobody heard of him here. It was also directed by Robert Wise, who did Sound of Music, and was a UFO believer. Think of all the UFO implications of the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. Our guests, Paul Kimball, Greg Bishop, the co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Forget everything you've been told about long-term food storage. When the collapse happens, you'll need the single most effective way to get high-powered Delta Force nutrients to your family fast. Like any Special Forces commando, you need a plan. You need a Black Hawk Down food plan. Introducing the Survival Sprout Bank from Solutions from Science. It's your countertop survival garden. Yes, grow fresh greens right on your countertop in just a few short days. Sprouts are the green shoots that emerge from newly germinated seeds, and they are powerhouses of living, easily absorbed nutrients. The Survival Sprout Bank is a complete kit with nothing else to buy. And with sprouts so easy to grow, even children can grow emergency food. Call 877-327-0365 or go to SurvivalSproutBank.com. That's 877-327-0365 or order online at SurvivalSproutBank.com. Survival Sprout Bank, your Black Hawk Down emergency food plan. This special announcement is brought to you by Renaissance Charge.
Have you ever wondered if you could make your car run on 100% electric power for free? It is now possible. How about a simple device that is both a super efficient motor and a free energy generator at the same time? What if this could also be used to restore useless batteries and save you lots of money? Because our customers asked for it, we have organized a Renaissance Charge Conference workshop on July 29th to July 31st at the beautiful Coeur d'Alene Resort in Idaho. Not only will you see these fascinating energizers, but you will be able to build some alongside genius inventor John Bedini. Participate in this truly historic event featuring our cutting-edge alternative energy, Tesla technology. Register early for the best seats and advanced workshop by visiting rcharge.com. That's r-charge.com for details. Or call 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514.
Did you know that drinking pure, high alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health? Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of only the most alkaline minerals. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins, and helps you regain health and energy. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen content, and raises the pH of your body to healthy levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com today.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jim Mosley, editor of Saucer Smear, and I'm here to say a good word or two about the Paracast, which I believe is the gold standard of paranormal radio. Listen to it if you can.
We return with co-host Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast, fifth anniversary episode with Greg Bishop and Paul Kimball. Paul, you were about to say something before we went to the break, I guess partly in response to what Greg said about the best and worst films.
Yeah, it took me a little while because generally speaking, I don't focus on the worst films. I focus on the best films, the ones that I enjoy. For me, the worst science fiction film ever was Battlefield Earth. For so many reasons.
Oh, there you go. You nailed that one. Oh.
It took a little while because I've tried to block most of it out, but for so many reasons. And as Greg said, there's so many to choose from. But when you also throw in the fact that that actually had millions of dollars in the budget and some big name stars, and still managed to be complete and utter dreck. So on the plus side, because I have to wash that out of my mouth now just thinking about that, I would add Forbidden Planet, which is one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
Folks, if most people haven't seen it because it kind of came and went, but there was a great little film out last year called Never Let Me Go with Carey Mulligan, Keira Knightley, set in the United Kingdom in a very near future, kind of an alternate dystopian world, and it raised some very interesting questions about what might be coming for us in terms of cloning, in terms of how we might treat artificial life forms. And so, yeah, Never Let Me Go. If you find it on video, track it down. It was released last year, and almost nobody saw it, but it's actually really good.
Chris?
Like Paul, I tend to go with, you know, the best directors, and Ridley Scott, Stanley Kubrick, Steven Spielberg, Howard Hawks. Sci-fi movies and films by these gentlemen are my favorite, which would be 2001. for instance, I agree with Greg. Clockwork Orange is probably arguably my favorite film. Blade Runner, exceptional. Douglas Trumbull's effects in that are just mesmerizing. I think a groundbreaking film. The Thing, Howard Hawks, for you film buffs out there, it's considered the first film where the director actually had the characters talk over one another with the dialogue. That's the first time that actually happened, and now it's commonplace in films for dialogue to be more lifelike in that regard. In terms of worst, Battlefield Earth, I like sci-fi movies. I used to like them more than I do now, but that's one of the few that I literally could not watch the whole thing. It was so bad. And so I'd have to agree with Paul on that one.
You know what?
Close Encounters is one that people haven't talked about. I think Close Encounters should be up on that list somewhere, too.
If only because we could see Dr. J. Allen Hynek in the final scenes.
One film that has a really good bearing on the UFO subject and how people look at it and the paranormal in general, and you wouldn't expect, that really affects me is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I love what that film did with the subconscious and what a dreamscape might look like. And I think that should inform people that are interested in the paranormal and UFOs and maybe some sort of contact with some other consciousness. Does that make any sense to anybody?
Do you people all regard the franchise films like Star Trek, Star Wars, etc. as being basically just junk food? Paul,
no,
you're the filmmaker.
I love them. On my Facebook thing, I had a status update that said, I'm such a geek, I was with an old friend from the music industry, he's now in the film industry, had coffee, hadn't seen him in years. And we basically, instead of talking about business or stuff, we spent about an hour deconstructing the Star Wars prequels. And where exactly did George Lucas completely lose his mind?
Probably the first line in the film.
Yeah, Trade Federation stuff. No. But it's one of those things where you become so invested in the franchise. I think Star Wars is great science fiction. I think Star Trek is great science fiction. And just because they're done, the Star Trek reboot that they did just a year or two ago, I thought was fantastic. An entertaining, compelling film with cool characters. Nice
great
story.
Casting.
And you know what's interesting to me is that's one of the few films where I just watched it and smiled from beginning to end, from the very first scene, and also watching how they basically rebooted it with new characters that sort of kind of resemble the originals, but had their own takes on it, and how they took the characters, and I'd be interested in seeing how that goes. What about the film Inception? Now, that's kind of a mind-blowing kind of exercise. We've got realities within realities within realities that only Christopher Nolan
could
bring
down. Well,
that's
why I was talking about Eternal Sunshine, too.
Sure.
It's the same kind of thing. It forces people to think in a different way. Tarantino did this, although other people did it before in different ways with Pulp Fiction, but forcing people to look at reality and the way they experience it in different ways, and that's a really valuable thing that film does, and Inception did that, and I'm glad it was popular and glad that it did what it did. But any film like that does that, treats that subject well, what thought processes are, what you see in your mind, how important is that as compared to quote-unquote waking reality. These are important issues.
And the other question, I think the final science fiction question before we get back to the paranormal, superhero franchises. Okay, can we do decent ones? I mean, I guess the Batman films try to treat the characters realistically. We now, of course, have so many British actors portraying Americans, like Christian Bale as Batman. And, of course, Commissioner Gordon is also British. And now we have a British actor playing Superman. But let me go to Chris before we go to our filmmaker in residence here. So what about superheroes? You like them? You hate them? What, Chris?
You know, I've never been a big superhero fan. I think the Spider-Man films are pretty good, for instance. Of course, the Green Hornet, I think. Is that out yet, or did it already die?
It did mediocre, but I think it's probably going to make money based on what it's doing worldwide.
Yeah.
But the problem is they tried to make it into a comedy.
You
have to think that the Green Hornet on radio in the movies, early movies, and on TV was meant to be straight ahead.
Right, right.
And you'd have to think, oh, by the way, another piece of trivia, the guy who played the Green Hornet on radio, the late Al Hodge, was Captain Video on TV. And in the 60s, the 60s reboot of Green Hornet, Bruce Lee.
Yeah, Bruce Lee. That's where he got his start, yeah. Yeah, I've just never really been I didn't really read comic books that much when I was a kid. My favorite was Turok, Son of Stone, which I believe was a Dell comic about two Indians that end up in the center of the earth battling dinosaurs.
Sounds like Edgar Rice Burroughs Revisited.
Yeah, exactly. I would be interested to see a John Carter of Mars film. I've heard
they're working on it.
Yeah, that's going to be coming out. And, you know, I think this summer we're going to have some pretty interesting films coming out. We have Super 8, Cowboys and Aliens, which looks like it could be fun. I'm not sure if anyone present has seen the Battle for L.A. or whether it's even out yet, but that looks pretty hokey. Another film that I found recently that came out was District 9. I thought that was actually pretty interesting because it totally turned the genre upside down. In terms of the actual plot lines and the aliens being put in a township and stuff. I thought
and a compound,
that was pretty,
kind of discrimination.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I wanted to get into the superheroes, and maybe we'll ask Greg Bishop. Superhero films, like them or hate them?
I don't feel either of them. Here's what I get in trouble for. I don't care. I really have never cared about superhero films. When I was in junior high and high school, well, because it never spoke to me. The things that spoke to me when I was in junior high and high school were underground comics, like Freak Brothers or Von Baudet, if anybody ever heard of him.
Zippy.
Yeah, Zippy the Pinhead, Jeff Jones, people, all these underground comics artists of the 70s, 80s, 90s, those kind of, Love and Rockets, all those things interested me, not DC superhero. Although I did enjoy the first and second Iron Mans. I thought they were fun, filmmaking, and a fun ride, worth the money. And, you know, that maybe that's what a superhero is supposed to be. Kids apparently love Iron Man right now. So I don't know why that is. They're just all into Iron Man. So maybe there's something there. It's speaking to them on a more basic level. But, yeah, superhero films and superheroes just never really interested me.
Well, I grew up with Superman and Batman, so I kind of like the films. I like the first Tim Burton Batman. The second one got a little too grisly. The rest were just garbage. The Christopher Nolan reboot I liked. I like the Richard Donner Superman film, the one with Christopher Reeve, although it got a little campy. You know, the characters of Lex Luthor as Gene Hackman playing him and his cohorts.
Ned Beatty.
Yeah. Now, Ned is a terrific actor. He was in Network. He's a great actor, and he's still alive and still a great actor. I thought that was the part that upset me. A few other things, too, about continuity, but Paul understands that better. We're talking to Paul Kimball, Greg Bishop. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-877-804-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So, disable the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-877-804-MY-TV right now to sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99 and up to 4 rooms. And there's no equipment to buy. That includes your free HDTV upgrade, your free DVR upgrade, and your free professional installation. And the best part, the pristine digital picture and sound. Call 1-877-804-MY-TV. So, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-877-804-MY-TV. 1-877-804-MY-TV. Disable the cable, cut costs, and get more. Call 1-877-804-MY-TV. 1-877-804-MY-TV.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver. That's UTOPIA Silver. UtopiaSilver.com or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com. Taking back America's healthcare, one American at a time.
Go solar for cheap. Want to use solar power but the price is too high? Now you can build your own solar panels for less than $200 at 123cheapsolar.com. Don't laugh. We've sold over 45,000 solar do-it-yourself kits. Watch the step-by-step videos that even non-handyman types can use. We offer a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to 123cheapsolar.com or call 800-713-0486. 800-713-0486. Reduce your foreign oil dependency when you go green with 123cheapsolar.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We return with Chris O'Brien, the co-host, our guest, Paul Kimball, former co-host and still friend of the show and still my friend, I hope, Greg Bishop, guest co-host. Now, talking about superheroes, Paul Kimball, what's your say before we get back to the paranormal?
Huge fan. When I was in law school, taking criminal law classes, I used to scribble Batman comics on my criminal law textbooks. So
when they caught you?
They never caught me. The nice thing about law school is it's not like high school. The professors don't come around checking to make sure you're sitting there paying attention. You know, you either are or you aren't, and you'll find out on the final exam whether somebody was or wasn't. So, and for the money you're paying, they don't really care. So, you know, my brother and I, he's a Yankees fan. I'm a Red Sox fan. He's a Superman fan. I was a Batman guy. You know, it was always that kind of thing. I think every generation needs its myths, whether they're the Greek gods or whether it's Robin Hood and Camelot or whatever. And I think the cultural impact of, in particular, Superman and Batman to a lesser extent, and arguably he's become more popular now because we live in a more nihilistic society. But the cultural impact in the United States of Superman as a defining myth, as a character that is larger than life, I don't think can be underestimated in the 20th century. I think Superman is one of the great creations in literature of all time. And because it speaks to so many different things, I think Batman is a great creation too. I think there are other characters that are as well that all have interesting things to say. But those two in particular have stood the test of time, which is amazing in and of itself.
I understand these characters were started like the late 30s or around 1940 for Batman. We're talking about characters that have been here for over 70 years.
Yeah, and they will be here for much longer. And they've gone through constant reinterpretations, everything from the campy 60s Batman, which seemed to fit the zeitgeist of the time, to now the one that I prefer, the much darker Chris Nolan take on Batman. You know, and the Tim Burton stuff was great for its time, which was the 80s when things were a little happier and maybe a little more cartoonish, but also there was an element of darkness there too. So, you know, you can write whatever your generation thinks about itself on superheroes, And I think every society should have them. And unlike Greg, it's one of the things Greg and I differ on. I have no interest in underground comics, never have, probably never will. I just didn't get them. But superheroes, yeah, those I have always and will always find interesting. And so it annoys me when somebody like David Kelly comes along and he's completely, I don't even really like Wonder Woman, but he's going to completely ruin Wonder Woman with this new television show he's got coming up about her. You know, totally ruin it. But this summer, Green Lantern, I'm a fan. Thor, I'm a fan. Everything I know about Norse mythology, I learned from Thor comics. I was inspired.
Captain America, the first Avenger.
Absolutely, which, you know, could be like Saving Private Ryan meets Batman, which would be really interesting. I think all of these, every time a superhero film comes out, I go with high expectations. I'm usually disappointed more often than not, but it's worth it to see a film like The Dark Knight or the first Iron Man film. You get one that really is sort of transcends even the genre. That's fun, and I love them. Absolutely.
I'd like to be amazed. Let's get back to our paranormal universe here. And I guess the big question to ask here for each one of you, we'll start with Greg Bishop. Since the time you first started getting interested in paranormal stuff, UFOs, etc., how has your viewpoint of the entire thing evolved?
Well, it started out just like everybody else's, except it was just what I could first read. I read all the UFO, paranormal, Bigfoot, ghost books that I could. I mean, Loch Ness Monster, I read everything. And, you know, the at least at that point in the 70s and 80s, what you get basically is an idea that Bigfoot's a real flesh and blood creature. UFOs are piloted by aliens from other planets. And I stuck with that. And probably up through about the mid-1990s, when I started to realize that I should take other people, like we've said, Valet and Keel, seriously. I read Jim Brandon's book, Rebirth of Pan. That really affected me a lot. Any number of these alternative theory books. And then, believe it or not, what's the name of that book? The Gods of Eden. I really enjoyed that book. Not because I believed everything in it or anything like that, but the possibility that somebody could take the UFO thing, the UFO myth, the UFO area, whatever you want to call it, and apply a different set of criteria to it and look at it in a different way. That fascinated me and made me realize that you can think about it in any way that you want, and it's probably better that you do it that way. And now I'm to the point where I'm very open-ended about what it would be, and for all the things I say about anti-ETH, it's still a viable theory, just that it hasn't been proven. So as I get into the late 1990s and up to now, I realize there's so many different ways to look at the subject, and that makes it interesting to me, these alternative theories, bringing in something like theoretical physics, bringing in something like a paranormal theory of cryptozoology where the animals aren't flesh and blood. These things are interesting, and I don't really care particularly which one is true. I'd like to find out. But I think once you start closing yourself off to different ideas, then you've stopped thinking, you've stopped evolving, and you'll probably never learn anything anymore. And I like to keep learning, and that's why I try to keep an open mind about things, and I don't really alight on any one theory or another. I basically cheerlead for other ones so that to try and push people to think differently about it and come back and tell me something and help me learn something.
Chris O'Brien, how is your viewpoint about the paranormal, about UFOs, etc.? How has that evolved over the years?
Well, growing up, I think similar to Greg, I you know, was programmed by the culture. I mean, I saw those great science fiction movies from the 50s, and I just assumed that we were being visited by flesh and blood, you know, here in our universe, reality aliens that were coming here and for whatever reason, interacting with humans and making their presence known to a certain extent. It wasn't until I started going out personally into the field, having my own personal experiences as well as documenting the experiences of others, that I very quickly realized that an ETH theory, even though it does seem to be the most logical theory to jump towards, that it couldn't possibly, in my mind, totally cover the width and breadth and depth of the phenomenon. So I started then really revisiting Jacques Vallée and Keel and Jim Brandon, Rebirth of Pan, excellent book. Also, his book Weird America, if you can find it, is probably one of my all time favorite books. And I started to revisit these other alternative theories and started attempting to think outside of the box a little bit. I'm particularly interested in cases similar to what Greg mentioned before, where you have multiple phenomenal events that seem to coalesce around one another, whether it's dimensional type effects or Bigfoot or crypto creatures. Another thing that has developed in my thinking is I have a strong growing suspicion that the intelligence agencies and the government is much more involved in perpetrating some of these cases than I think initially I thought. And I do think that there's a major component to this whole mystery that has our tax dollars and Boys with Toys written all over it. So that's another way that my thinking has developed. Since meeting Ray Stanford, who is totally wedded to an ETH hypothesis and is going about proving this with analyzing supposed hard data, my thinking has come back a little bit towards the ETH, but I'm still in no way, shape, or form wedded to any particular theory except my own, which is that there's a tricksterish element involved in all of these subjects, and it's a cultural aspect that I think has been totally overlooked in this, and the giggle factor, the absurdity factor that seems to be prevalent in many, if not most, UFO cases, for instance, and is kind of swept under the rug, I think may have some very, very valuable information, and we could really get some insight into what we're dealing with if we look at it in a tricksterish, with a tricksterish pair of glasses on. And so in a nutshell, that's kind of how my thinking has evolved.
Now, just before we split for our next hourly break, you raised something there of a tricksterish aspect of UFOs. But that also raises another kind of deception, which is deception on the part of government officials. Has the U.S. government, other governments around the world, have they been pulling tricks on us, maybe creating events that we think might be paranormal related? And I'll remind listeners, when we had James Carey on, the former international director of the Mutual UFO Network, on a previous episode of the Paracast, that's what he was talking about, and that's what we're going to talk about soon. The guest, Paul Kimball, Greg Bishop, the co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNLive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNLive.com. Again, that's GCNLive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.